welcome to Hot Weekly.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And we are back once again with episode 102. I hope all of you wonderful people are almost done recovering from haunt season.
Yes.
And that those of you who went to the Legendary Haunt Tour are recovering neatly from that.
Yeah, we've been seeing photos, and it looks like a blast.
At least a couple of our friends have gone to that, and Sylvia in particular has been very active and posting photos on Facebook and elsewhere, and just looks like an awesome time. All kinds of stuff. People covered in blood, and lots of fun. Lots of fun to be had on this tour. I definitely hope to check it out one year. This looks like an amazing time. It looks even better than I had imagined.
Right.
And I had imagined a lot.
Yes.
But yes, folks, you are listening to Haunt Weekly. If you were not intending to listen to Haunt Weekly, please disengage this podcast now. You have clearly screwed something up.
Yes.
But if you are intending to listen to Haunt Weekly, please do take a minute to check us out at hauntweekly.com. We're on social media, Facebook at Haunt Weekly, Twitter at Haunt Weekly, and also we're on the YouTubes. Mm-hmm. At tinyurl.com/hauntweekly. Check us out there. The YouTube channel does lots of neat and cool things that we can't do with the regular podcast, like do listicles and things like that. So check us out there. Also a great place to comment. We've been getting a lot of great comments and such on YouTube, too.
Right.
So, awesome stuff there. Big news from here. We like to start out with our news because we're arrogant and self-centered bastards. if we sound a little more exhausted than usual, which I know I say that every week now.
You do, but that's because it's been October.
That is very true. I will not be saying that hopefully forever, but this week our excuses, we just got back from Renfest.
Yes.
The Louisiana Renaissance Festival takes place in November, conveniently, November and December.
Right.
Which is, it used to overlap with haunt season.
Yeah, it used to start the last, weekend in October. And now they've pushed that back.
So, I think they
which works well for us.
Yeah, I think they timed it out so that it started right after time change.
Yeah.
After daylight savings time ended.
Right.
And I'm not sure why, but that's my working theory. And the result of that was previously it was right before Halloween, like Halloween weekend. It was the opening weekend.
Right.
And that always sucked.
Yes.
So now it runs November, but yes, I finally got to go. You went last weekend with your brother.
Right. You weren't feeling well.
I wasn't feeling well. My back was killing me. But doing better this weekend, managed to go, had a great time. And honestly, if you're a haunter and you don't go to your local Renfest, you're missing out.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. It's a great chance to explore, to get ideas, and to see character actors of a different sort.
Yes.
But one of my favorite things about the Louisiana Renaissance Festival is always Christoph the Insulter.
Yes.
Who, if you have not actually seen his shtick, check it out. It's incredible. He has a website, but it's like really poorly maintained. So you're going to want to go to his Facebook. And it's just Christoph, C-H-R-I-S-T-O-P-H-E is how you spell Christoph. The Insulter, I-N-S-U-L-T-O-R is how you spell Insulter. I'm not sure if that is grammatically correct, but that's how he does it.
Yes.
But anyways, it's absolutely hilarious stuff that he does. Very, very vulgar insultings.
Yes.
And this week at the Renfest was apparently the week all the people from 13th Gate decided to show up.
Yes, there were a lot of 13th Gate
a
shirts
lot, and
there.
A lot of people clearly with the people with the 13th Gate shirts.
Right.
So, yes, a lot of people from 13th Gate, including at the Christoph the Insulter show. And so, yes, this was the time it finally happened. Someone in my group paid to have me insulted.
Well, yes.
And paid quite handsomely for it, actually.
Yes.
And so, I ended up getting about a 5 to 10 minute evisceration.
Yeah. Well, and it wasn't just, that we paid, or you know, our group paid to have you insulted, because some random stranger
chipped in 20 bucks
to add to...
Yeah, basically, the stranger told Kristoff, here's 20 bucks, just tack it on to some poor, unfortunate soul that's already getting insulted. And Kristoff chose me.
Yes.
So I ended up getting the equivalent of a $60 roasting, which is pretty rough. But I was not the grand finale, which was a good place for me to be, because can you imagine the fundraising that might have happened?
Yes.
If the 13th Gate people realized I was the target of the grand finale.
They realized it as soon as your name was called. But, I think that was a poor choice on his part.
Well, he had no way of knowing just how eager the crowd might be to see me receive my comeuppance.
Yes. I know.
It was all in good fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very funny. I really enjoyed it. I actually had a good time with it. And I actually shook Kristoff's hand afterward and said, thank you for doing such a wonderful job. It reminded me of home. It took me back. It was absolutely wonderful. But yes, I got my lambasting today in front of at least a half a dozen to a dozen 13th Gate employees.
Yeah.
I'm sure stories will be told about this.
That is your egocentric nature.
Yes,
to think that people would be talking about you afterwards.
Well, they were. And it's really kind of funny because we can't go anywhere.
No.
Because we went there and we actually got recognized a couple of times.
Right.
From the garbage horror side of things that we do.
Right.
And it's because apparently a lot of people from Rise work there.
Right.
And 13th Gate, of course, was visiting en masse.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there were several Rise t-shirts, too. So
yes, there were some.
They were also visiting, but not as many.
Yeah, not as numerous, not en masse. I don't know if 13th Gate, had a group day or something they were doing.
Yeah.
And I just didn't hear about it, or...
Yeah, because we didn't see...
I don't know why I would have heard about it.
I don't know why either. I did see people that we know through Facebook posting they were there yesterday, so I wasn't expecting to see them today. But anyway.
Yeah, but anyways, it was a good time, had a lot of fun, and yes, my egocentric nature basically has me getting blasted in front of 13th Gate people, so
yes.
fun times.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, we have conference reminders before we get into our main event this week.
We do.
I guess I'll kick off this time around.
Okay.
Coming up in January, the 12th to the 15th, it's HauntCon, Halloween and Party Expo, right here in New Orleans, Louisiana, at the Ernest Memorial Convention Center, HauntCon.com, to learn more. We have received word the education schedule is coming forth soon.
Yeah.
I am hoping that I will be speaking. I have put in proposals, fingers crossed.
Right.
I have no idea if they're... Because one of the things is this conference is kind of a wild card.
Yeah.
Because this was run by Leonard Pickle.
Right.
For the longest time. And now he has sold it. It's now done by the people who were doing the Halloween and Party Expo. So all bets are off as to what will be at this conference. However, if you are coming to HauntCon, let us know. We want to meet you. We want to shake your hand. We want to possibly go for drinks with you. We possibly want to, show you our little haunt.
Yes.
So we would like to do all this stuff. We think it'd be awesome to have you hang around.
Right.
So we will work between now and January to make that happen.
Right. We also know that the guys from Haunt Topic Radio have teamed up with HauntCon and will be there doing interviews and so forth.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. So then March 22nd through the 25th is the next one that we have, at least. Transworld's Halloween and Haunt
Attraction
Show.
Oh, man, it's been a long day.
It has. St. Louis, Missouri, America Center, HAASHOW.com to find out more.
And April 13th through the 15th, it's West Coast Haunters Convention in Portland, Oregon at the DoubleTree Hotel, Portland. Learn more at hauntersconvention.com.
Then, May 18th through 20th, Halloween Show and National Haunters Convention presents Halloween Boardwalk Empire. Atlantic City, New Jersey, Showboat Convention Center, halloweenshow.com for more info on that.
And then after that, the May 25th through 27th, it's the Midwest Haunters Convention in Columbus, Ohio at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. MidwestHauntersConvention.com for more. If you know of a convention or conference that's haunted attraction related that we have missed, please let us know at the aforementioned locations on social media. That is Haunt Weekly on Facebook and Haunt Weekly on Twitter. We will add it. We're getting ready to revamp and expand the calendar.
Yes.
Moving forward, so please let us know what we might have missed.
All right.
All righty. Now we get to the talk of the week, the controversy, if you will.
I don't know if it's a controversy. We are controversial, but I don't know that this is a controversy.
We're not going to get any listeners if we don't mention controversy, so you got to help me out here, Crystal.
Okay, so we have listeners, and this is the first time you're mentioning it.
Okay, that's a good point. But anyways, but yes, the focus this week is on haunt crutches. Mm-hmm. Now, before we really commence into this, and we're just giving some examples, so obviously we can't do a full and complete list in an hour.
Right.
So we're going to give a handful of examples. But so what do we mean by haunt crutches? These are things, usually scares, but we're going to talk about some non-scare related things.
Right.
That haunts tend to lean on because they're easy and they're just kind of cheap, to be frank.
Yeah.
Now, when looking at a crutch as a scare, or crutch scares as I'm calling them, it has to, one, work.
Yeah.
Because if it didn't work, if it didn't get that pop, if it didn't get a result,
right,
nobody would do it.
Right. So it's got to be effective.
It's got to be effective. Two, it has to be extremely common to the point of overuse. Emphasis on overuse.
Right.
And three, it has to be relatively easy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talk about how all these haunts are going to these really high-end movie set designs. Well, that's not easy.
No.
That's very flipping hard. That's not a crutch. That's us trying to improve our show across the board.
Right.
Now, to be very, very clear, we are not saying to never use these tactics and these scares.
No. We'd be stupid to say that.
All of them have been used well in the past, and we've been to haunts that you used in the past. And at least with some of these, I like to think we've used some of these well ourselves.
Yes.
But
we have one this season.
Yeah,
we'll talk
about it in a minute. Yeah. We'll come to this one.
I know.
but we, and that includes us, have a tendency to lean on these types of things a bit too hard. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we're guilty of this. And we're going to come to one we're really guilty of in our history.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, that's basically the thing. Is I'm not standing here saying holier than thou. We've never made these mistakes.
No. Nope.
Believe me, we have. But it's time that we actually started thinking about these as crutches and started really evaluating their use and to make sure that these are the best things we can do, not just easy and effective things we can do.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes when you're out of ideas, you go to a crutch.
Yes. And I understand that. I sympathize. But come on, guys.
Yep.
We're better than this. We are a creative industry. We are better than this. We are more capable than this.
Yes. All right.
So let's start with the lowest hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Let's take
We've mentioned this a few times.
A few times, and we're mentioning it again. Chainsaws.
Yes.
Chainsaws have been a part of haunting pretty much since day one. Pretty much since, you know, like haunted houses were a thing. And the reason is they are super duper simple. I mean, A, they're the connection with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Right.
That put chainsaws as a horror device in everyone's mind.
Yes.
But beyond that, it's a super simple scare. Take a chainsaw, gas powered ideally, remove the chain, scare people.
Right.
What could be simpler?
Yes. And if you are one of those haunts that has to use electric for whatever reason, just don't.
You know,
I've seen it.
The sound is not there.
No, it's not.
The sound is simply not there. And that's one of the things I've always found so kind of amusing about the electric chainsaws when I've seen. A, it's not very scary being chased by a guy with an extension cord behind him.
No.
And I'm thinking, well, I know if I can get 50 feet away.
Yeah.
Dang.
They bought the 100 feet cord.
Dang it, foiled again. But the sound isn't there. And the very first haunt we ever acted in had a scene with an electric chainsaw.
Right.
And it just did not work, even among the scariest of the scaredy cats.
No.
It didn't. And it was really kind of funny because inside the haunt, and the reason they did it was obviously gas fumes, and that is a completely understandable reason.
Right.
But they could have had him do just about anything else when he burst through than have an electric chainsaw.
Yeah.
But anyways, that chainsaw was paired with one outside that I swear to God sounded like a Buick with a V8 engine.
Yeah. It was a large one.
It was a very, like a logging chainsaw or something. I don't know what the hell that was. I haven't heard one that loud since, I don't think.
Mm.
But anyways, so yeah, it's a super, super simple scare. And it's one that, despite overuse, still works incredibly well.
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
I don't either.
In fact, as I've joked before on this podcast and elsewhere, I've been around so many gimmicked chainsaws, I am not to be trusted with real ones.
Yeah.
This is how I lose my fingers. I'm sure. No, look, it can't hurt you. Bah! That's how I'm going to lose my fingers someday. It can be part of a great scare, but it does get overdone. Like, we have actually been to haunted, and mind you, they haven't done this in years, but they actually had a full-on chainsaw maze.
Right.
Where you're going through a scene, kind of snaking through these chain-link fences.
Yep.
And there's like five dudes with chainsaws harassing the line.
Five or more. But the thing is, you say that, but they were behind fence pieces. So it's not even like the actors were getting really close.
No. No, you were very well protected from the chainsaws.
Yeah.
Even if they hadn't been gimmicked.
Right. So that kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah. But yeah, it can get really, really overdone. And it can be done in places where it's just not the right scare.
Yeah. Or it's not safe to do it there.
Yeah. We've had one of our friends who went with us through a haunt actually get minor burns on her feet.
Right.
Because the thing we tend to forget about chainsaws is yes, they don't have a blade on them, they're not going to cut anyone, but they still get hot, especially as the night goes on.
Right.
And if someone is saying, like one of our friends, apparently being kind of stupid and wearing sandals or open-top shoes
right.
or slip-ons or something like that, they can still get burns when you do the little tap on the feet thing, which I don't really understand that. Because
yeah.
if someone's not moving for the chainsaw,
yeah.
touching them with it isn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they're not scared of the chainsaw at like 2 feet away, they're probably not going to be super scared of it close. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've just been with like super brave people. But yeah. I don't understand how that is the moment. But anyways, they've gotten minor burns on their feet. And the worst use I think I've ever seen, the dumbest, was a haunt in the northern part of the state. That basically sits downtown in the city, in like a small city. And they put the chainsaw at the end.
Yeah.
Like always, the problem is their exit literally dumps right onto a major street.
Yeah.
So people are bolting out this door to get away from the chainsaw and then running right into traffic.
Yeah, and that's actually a good example of a haunt that did it the best chainsaw gag I think I've seen.
Yeah.
And
the worst.
The worst. Because, okay, so that part's the worst. But earlier in the haunt, they had a guy trying to start it up. Hmm. And you could see him working on it, and he was just cursing his head off.
Mumbling and
very
growling.
Frustrated. Not using curse words, but very frustrated with it. And you could see his frustration, and he's sitting there trying to crank it, and you hear the sound, and you just know it's going to start up.
And then it doesn't.
And then that was great.
That was a good use of tension on that one.
Yeah.
And then later on, they just fire it up and run you right in front of cars.
Exactly.
And we saw something similar at Camp Blood, mm-hmm. where they had a good pop scare on one of the trail parts
right.
that caused the rest of our group to naff off and go somewhere
right.
else.
Nope.
And then we saw it used later poorly when they tried to use it as a turnaround gag.
Right.
So it's a scare that can be used well. It has its place, but it seems like every time a haunt's like, okay, we don't know what we're doing to scare people here, but we need people to keep moving.
Right.
Get a chainsaw.
Well, and the other thing is that a lot of haunts use it as their last scare to flush people out.
Yeah. Which is an understandable use of it.
It is.
Because that's what it's best at, is getting people to clear out.
Right.
To move.
But if you're clearing out into a roadway, it's probably not the best
or
idea.
Or a field that's dark and not flat or something like that. Yeah. You've got to understand that people... In fact, we talked about in the news, the guy who was hit by an SUV.
Right.
By being flushed out, and then the actors got too aggressive and literally ran him into traffic. You've got to be mindful of this.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm not sure that's quite how the story worked, but yeah, it's really close how the story worked.
It's close enough. It was a chainsaw.
Yes.
It ran him into traffic, and he got hit. Those are the fundamental points.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so, but yeah, the main thing is, make sure this really is the best scare you got, both from a safety standpoint and from a scare standpoint.
Right.
Because it's very, very tempting when you need to get people to move along to say, chainsaw, done. But maybe there's better.
Yeah.
Maybe there's other things you can and should be doing there. And honestly, it's gotten to where even people who don't go through a lot of haunts have come to associate the chainsaw with the end.
Yeah.
Some people hear chainsaw and go, oh, we're at the end.
Right. Actually, we heard that from a friend this season who it was her first time going to haunts with us.
Yeah.
And she's like, was happy to hear the chainsaw because she thought it was going to be over.
And then it wasn't.
And then it wasn't because they use chainsaws throughout.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, we need to really evaluate when and how we use chainsaws
right.
in this industry. And that's something that, like, we went to, I think, grand total of like 16 haunts this season.
Yeah,
15, 16.
It was a lot.
It was a lot. I think only two did not have any chainsaws that I can recall.
Right. And only one of the ones that did had it not at the end.
Yeah. And had it in a very effective way elsewhere in the haunt. So, yeah, just something to think about. Most of the time, it was just the same old cliche of end of haunt, run people out with a chainsaw.
Right.
Come on. We've got, when you go to a lot of haunts and you see that over and over and over again, it wears a little thin, I got to admit.
Right.
Okay. The next one, strobe lights.
Yes.
This, I know, is a particular grudge of yours.
It is.
Now, this the thing that drives me crazy about this one is that we see this at haunts that are immaculately designed.
Yeah.
Some amazingly well done haunts.
Right.
Will use strobe lights in what seems like every other fucking room. And it's so maddening because, okay, I get it. It's an easy way to disorient the customers. It's an easy way to mask actor movement.
Yeah.
It's an easy way to basically set up a scene and to light a scene. But, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, the obvious issue is photosensitivity.
Right.
Now, I actually looked up the statistics on this.
Okay.
In terms of, like, photosensitivity with epilepsy.
Yeah.
We're talking a very, very small percent. And
right.
I was actually blown away by how small of a percent. Roughly, according to the stats, and I'm trying to make sure I got this right, 1% of the population has epilepsy.
Right.
And of those who have epilepsy, 3% can be triggered by photosensitivity.
Yeah.
So basically, it's something like 1 out of every 20,000 people have that particular issue with epilepsy. But there are other types of photosensitivity.
Right.
Than epilepsy. There are people,
vertigo.
There's vertigo. There are people that are just simply annoyed and nauseated in strobe lights. And is it really an enjoyable experience?
It's not really an enjoyable experience. It doesn't add anything to the scene. In fact, to me, it takes away. And it's a cheap way to light a room. It particularly bothers me at the haunts you were just describing, where so much detail goes into every scene, and then you put a freaking strobe light when you've got beautiful lighting just before and just after.
Yeah.
You've got someone who knows how to do lighting. Why are they doing this?
Yeah, why is this the approach for this room?
Yes.
And, another thing to think about is strobe lights slow down groups.
Yes.
Because, especially if there's a situation where they're trying to find their path, or they're trying to make sure they don't step into things or bump into things,
right.
It slows down groups a lot. Now, there are times you may want to slow down a group.
Right.
I understand that. But if you're going to slow down groups, bear in mind what it does to your throughput.
Yeah.
This tanks throughput.
It does.
I mean, if you're trying to put through thousands of people in a night, having them slow to a crawl in multiple rooms because they can't see where they're going.
Right.
It's not a good thing.
No.
And it's also, and the thing that really does drive me crazy also is when it gets used in rooms it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've seen it used in an old-timey butcher shop.
Yep.
I've seen it used in a pirate ship.
Yeah.
Arr, we be strobing, matey.
Oh, God.
Okay. All right, we'll edit that one out in post. Oh, we don't have post-production. Oh, wait.
Yes.
Oh, damn it. And it's like, oh, it's... You just see it in these rooms where it doesn't make sense.
Right.
It like, if it were in a mad scientist lab, that might make some degree of sense.
Yeah, well, especially if it was inside of a prop that was strobing. You know, and with other light around it to... You know,
yeah,
to dull down the strobe effect.
Yeah, you can use strobes can be kind of cool in that type of an environment.
Right,
but it I just don't understand. Like you said, why do some of these haunts immaculately design these rooms, and just when it comes time to lighting, it's just powerful strobe, you know, either right in the center of the room or right above where you're coming in, so it's projecting forward and illuminating the path ahead.
Right.
And it's just like, that is so, A, lazy.
Yes.
And B, annoying. Because I don't particularly enjoy strobes. I don't get vertigo, but I do get headaches and strobes.
Right. Also, never, ever use strobes to light a trail haunt.
Oh, or anything with uneven surfaces.
Yeah, because we have seen that too.
Yeah, oh God, yes, you're right. Oh, I didn't even put that in the notes, but very good point, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's just it. And the worst part about it is when we go into a room and it seems like the whole scare is the strobe.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing we're supposed to be afraid of, is that we're going through a strobe and maybe we're going through some animal pelts or some body parts or something, but the strobe is the scare.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
No.
It just doesn't work. There's no startle in that distracting startle. Now, that being said, I have seen it used to some great effect. 13th Gate actually had one of my favorite uses of strobe, which was when you're going through the waist-high... We were going through the waist-high claustrophobia tunnels with the gore scene.
Right.
What they did is they illuminated the gore sequence, not necessarily your path, but the gore sequence, with a strobe. And so all you're seeing are these little flashes of nightmarish and hellish gore and actors crawling around and struggling.
Right.
And it was a really cool effect. I feel bad for those poor actors sitting underneath that strobe light
for
4 or 5 hours. But, you know, the point remains, A, it wasn't us that had to contend with a strobe so much. It was illuminating the scene. And it was used to great effect. Because I'm pretty sure if they'd lit it any other way...
Yeah.
The cheapness and the cheesiness of it, because it was not their best decorated scene, would not have come through, would have come through more. But by doing it with a strobe, you're just getting those pops, those flashes of the gore.
Right.
You're not really seeing all the details, but you're seeing the horror.
Right.
It works.
Yeah, because your brain fills in the blanks.
Exactly. So, yeah, I understand why strobes are used. We actually have a hard no-strobe rule.
Yeah.
And the reason for us is because we get people, we're home haunt, we're free haunt, we get people from all experience levels with haunted attractions.
Right.
And if anyone has photosensitivity issues, not just epilepsy, but vertigo or other sensitivity issues to strobes, they might not know that a haunt is not a good environment for them.
Right. Well, not only that, but we also have two actors who have been with us a long time who do have...
Yeah.
Violent reactions to strobes.
Yeah, nausea
yes.
reactions. So yes, we do not do strobes. Full stop.
Yep.
And that's pretty much always been an effect.
And I take pride in my lighting.
Yeah, lighting is one of the things I think we do exceptionally well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things we don't do well. Yeah. But lighting, I think, is one we do well. Okay, moving on. Moving down the list.
All right.
Fog.
Fog.
I actually like fog. And yep. By the way, it's pretty. And by the way, apologies to Tater.
Yeah.
for this segment, but we do need to rethink our love affair with fog. Fog is very useful when setting a scene.
Right.
A little like low lying fog in a cemetery.
Oh yeah.
Even using bigger areas of fog to transition between two scenes.
Right, and also using the fog to make the laser beam tunnels.
Yes,
and
things like that. Very, very cool, neat effects. And like I said, one of my favorite uses of fog I think I've ever seen, we actually did it in a scientist lab sequence several years ago where we had an ice fogger but put it way up high, and so there was a waterfall of fog coming off the back wall and hitting the ground and staying low.
Right.
Now, since then, ever since that year, we pretty much outlawed the use of fog in the haunt.
Right.
But that was a really cool effect, and I've seen similar things done in other haunts, and it does look really, really cool. But here's the thing. A lot of haunts have been using it just everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, basically, we don't know what we're doing with this room. We're going to fill it with fog.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, we talked about the whiteout mazes in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just like, filled with fog, filled with bright lights. You can't see where you're going. You can't see what you're doing. You can't breathe.
Right.
But fog needs judicious use.
Yeah.
You can't go too crazy with it. I mean, too much makes it impossible to see your work.
Right.
And this goes back to, like, the strobe situation. Yeah. You worked hard on this stuff, man.
Right.
Let people see it.
Yeah. Another use that we've liked with fog is when you pump it through pipes to make it look like pipes are breaking.
Yeah.
You know,
steam.
That works well.
A safe version of steam. Yeah.
Yeah.
That works very, very well. It does well, it kind of as a prop in the room.
Right.
But not necessarily as the whole room.
Right.
And that's one of the problems. And here, you know, too much of it also causes breathing issues. That is, it can be rough on your customers, but it can be really rough on any actors in it.
Right.
And I suspect that's why, out of all the haunts in Atlanta did those stupid whiteout mazes that I hate so much, none of them had actors in them.
Oh, no.
Because I think the actors would be dead.
Yeah, you couldn't stay in there for very long.
Barely made it the 5 minutes we had to be in there.
I don't think it was even 5 minutes.
It felt like 5 minutes.
It felt like forever. I was so glad that we had someone who knew where they were going.
Yeah.
And just went to the exit and showed us out.
It's just, we have to stop using fog as the scare. Fog is ambiance. Fog is meant to be something we, you know, used to set a scene. It's not the entire scene.
Right.
I don't know. And I find it really, really frustrating. And I find it kind of lazy, frankly, when haunts just basically say, this is the fog room.
Yes.
It is filled with fog.
Yes.
Thanks. That was really nice of you. That was so much fun. Mm-hmm. All right. The one we're guilty of, the guiltiest of at least.
Yes.
Drop panels.
Yes.
Oh my God. I actually talked about this one years ago on a now-defunct blog. I can't even point to the post.
Right.
It was a blog I ran years ago when I first started doing haunt reviews in text.
Right.
You know, that words on screen.
We did that one.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
But anyways, drop panels, I love them. I admit it. I have a love for drop panels. And it's because they're easy to build. They can be very powerful, very great scares, especially when used properly. They're safe for actors. They're easy to time. And they're a great place to stick actors you're not sure about.
Right. And I think that there's also some nostalgia for us with drop panels, because the first haunt that we went to together had a really effective use of them, and we had never seen them before.
Yeah.
Now, that was 18 years ago now.
We are old, by the way. That's literally half my life ago. I just realized that.
Yes.
Literally half my life ago.
Yes, and you've spent it with me.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, no. Help! Help!
I think it would be more believable if I were saying help.
Fair enough. But even that haunt you're referring to did overuse them.
Right.
In fact, that was one of the things that really got me thinking about the overuse even back then, was the fact that it seemed like every panel, every painting, everything was a drop panel.
Right.
And we've even seen this translate some into haunts that we go to more recently. Like, I know, I love Rise to Death, but their graveyard sequence.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of drop panels.
It does. It does.
Now, they've cut back in recent years. I remember when they first did it, though, the hardest working man or woman, I don't know which it was, in acting was operating like 8 of them.
Yeah, it was a lot.
I don't know how in the hell. It was the same person, and I know it was the same person, because I actually asked and double-checked.
Yeah.
But they managed to operate like at least 6 drop panels. I'm not actually exaggerating when I say 6.
No, because they had a full walkway.
Yeah, and there's like a horseshoe around the long walkway, and they were hitting, oh my God.
Yeah.
Hats off to them. That was amazing.
Yes.
But the point of the matter is, it does get to be a point where you start expecting it.
Right.
You know, drop panels need to be, and this is something that a lot of haunts are guilty of. It's like, hey, we've got this long, empty hallway with nothing in it. Let's just stick a drop panel at the end.
Yeah.
Or in the middle of it or whatever.
Yeah.
No! That's not how drop panels work.
Yeah.
They don't just stick them off on their own to fill space. And I think that's kind of what's the common theme among all these. It's like, we need to fill space. We need to fill more room.
Right.
Here's what we're going to turn to.
Well, and that's why we had one this year.
Yeah.
Is because we didn't know what good scare. We couldn't come up with a new good scare to put in that room.
So what we did is we used a drop panel, but we also, I think, placed it and used it very well this year.
Yeah, we had a distract with it, which is important when using a drop panel.
Yeah, we actually had two distractions, it turned out.
Yeah.
We had one in the form of, you know, your brother being electrocuted off to one nearby it. And it turns out the hands we did were from... We've been going over some of the security camera footage. And there's one family, because what we did is we were built like a containment zone where it looked like you were on the inside of it.
Yeah.
And we had the hands reaching in, and they were just filled with fake limbs and Winn-Dixie bands, basically. And they were functionally attached to the wall, like I think I said previously, a half-inch screw, staples, and the hopes and fears of small children.
Yeah.
But the only thing holding in place. And there's one great security camera clip, I'm about to find it, where a mom is showing her daughter the hands aren't real.
Yeah.
And she walks over to there were three pairs of these hands. She chose the one in front of the drop panel.
Exactly.
She goes over to the drop panel, because see, look, and like bounces the hand.
Yeah.
And then drop panel is like 2 inches from it.
Yeah. Not even 2 inches.
Oh, it was bad. It was bad and beautiful. It was both.
It was beautiful.
But anyways.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is that there are innovative ways or innovations you can do with drop panels.
Yeah.
We've talked about some of them before. Put a projection thing on it.
Yeah.
You know?
Nightmare 3008 had a great thing where they had an actor in the ceiling.
Right.
And you go to look at him and what he's doing. Drop panels beside you.
Yeah, that's classic distract and startle.
Yeah, you've got to use some tactics, but the problem is... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No. Go ahead.
But the problem is, a lot of haunts, when they put a drop panel in, it's meant to be filler, and they don't actually, you know, place it properly in the scene.
Right. Well, and going back to Rise, they also have the full wall double drop panel.
Yeah.
They have that sequence.
And that's a beautiful example of a well-done drop panel.
Exactly. And, I mean, so there are innovations that you can do that make your drop panel different from all the others.
Yeah.
And we've tried a few of them. Some have worked. Some haven't.
But the main thing is, it's too easy, it seems like, to fall into the trap of, we don't know what we're doing here, there's a drop panel, scene done.
Right.
That's not how it works.
No.
This is too often used as a crutch, and we have been guilty of that in our past. And every time we do a drop panel now, which isn't that often, honestly, we sit there and we think, why are we doing a drop panel? And how are we making this a proper distraction? So how is this a full scare?
Right. And we also make sure that we only use one in the haunt.
Yeah, one per year.
Yeah.
1 year, I think, in our tiny little haunt, we had three.
Yeah. That was the first year we learned how to build them. We were excited.
We were really excited. We knew how to build them. Like, yeah, we're cranking these things out, man.
Yeah.
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 Got a little carried away.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Next item up for bid. LCD panels, projections, digital effects, and animatronics. I put them all in one category because they're all misused the same way.
Right.
These things look really cool. They're really expensive, but they're not scares.
Yeah.
You can't just stick an LCD panel in a room or an animatronic in a room, wipe your hands, and go away. This is something Netherworld did so well. They grokked this.
Right.
Because even in the room with the 30-foot-tall talking tree animatronic, if they had just not had anything in that room but that, I would not have knocked them.
Yeah.
Because that was a big enough, beautiful enough prop that I could just go, you know what, I'm cool with this.
Yeah.
But no, that was a distract for a distracting startle.
Yes.
Which is exactly how they used it. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
And they got that with the projections, too. They used them as backgrounds. These are things that set the scene. These are things that, you know, make your rooms more full. These are things that attract attention away from the scare.
Right.
I mean, if you are relying upon an animatronic to do your scare, you're going to be disappointed. You're not going to get the full punch.
Mm-hmm.
Humans do better scares. It's that simple. And we saw this firsthand at Folklore.
Yeah.
They had two separate haunts.
Right.
One was the manor. That was the actor-focused. And the other one, I can't remember, Tremulous?
Yes, I think that's correct.
Was the animatronic-driven one. The actor-driven one got all the screams.
Yes.
And there were some big, bad, awesome animatronics.
Yeah, there were.
In Tremulous. Believe me, it had some kick-ass stuff in it.
Yeah.
But that's just it. It's like, it's amazing. Like, an 8-foot dragon breaks through a wall and comes at you. Almost no reaction from the people we were with. But an actor around the corner in the other haunt had people falling on the floor, pretty much.
Yep.
It's building bigger and louder animatronics isn't the answer.
Mm-hmm.
These are great distractions. They can be very, very useful in setting a room. They can be very useful, but they're not by themselves scares.
Right.
So, just something to think about, something to grow with and build on that. Because I feel bad for a lot of haunts. Like, I know a couple haunts locally spent significant portions of their budget on LCD panels and things like that.
Yeah, right, then, when they first came out. They were the new big thing.
Yeah, new big thing, Fright Catalog, got a billion of them. Bought them out. And then they stick them in a room, and you go through the room, and you're like, that's an LCD panel.
Yes.
All right, next room.
Yes.
And it just doesn't work by itself.
They are not scares.
And that was really funny in that one haunt I'm thinking of, because we sat there and watched the LCD panel, because no one else was in the haunt. We went too early, and we went really early in the season. We knew we were the only people in the haunt, so we didn't feel hopelessly like jerks to stand and look at the LCD panels for a second.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking this whole time, if someone came behind me right now, I'd be hosed.
Yeah.
No one came behind me.
Nope. There is your scare.
That was the scare, is that the bride turns into a zombie and lunges at you in the panel.
Yes, everybody's seen it.
It doesn't work.
Nope.
All right. Let's get some actor training type stuff in here. The common sayings, and Japes is on the edge of his seat. I can practically hear him inching toward his speaker as we say these words. But go back to any of the podcasts with Japes for more on this particular issue. He's talked about this a lot. But common sayings, get out. Will you come play with me? You're next. I'm Bill Goldberg. No, that's not.
Yeah.
And, help me, or save me, or stuff like that.
Right.
Guys, I have been through haunts where I think I've heard help me and get out, back and alternating.
Exactly.
The entire goddamn way through.
That was the only thing they told their actors to say.
Just tell people to get out. And they're like, all right, I'm getting out.
Yeah, I'm trying to. That's the way I'm going.
And then my personal favorite, a haunt that normally does very good with their actor training, one actor said to me, get out, run away, fall immediately by, save me. I'm like, okay, these ideas are mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
I cannot do both.
Yeah.
It's physically impossible. But yeah, I think Japes had it right. If your actor cannot say something, you know, unique and, you know, interesting, like, I really like it, the 13th Gate, even though it's the same shtick pretty much every year, the autopsy room.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who greets you and walks with you as you're going through and is talking with you and is interactive with you, that's a good example of a vocal actor.
Right. Well, and they do conversations more than lines.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, yes, they are lines because, you know, they're rehearsed and stuff, but they're more of a conversational thing. Okay. They're not just one short sentence.
Yeah. Yeah. Telling all of your actors to say, get out, is not good.
No.
And basically, give them an opening line, maybe. Give them something to start a conversation. Like, hello, how are you doing? Welcome to my whatever. Yeah. Get them, but the goal is to build engagement, not to simply say something to get people going. And if you're trying to do an utterance to scare people, I think Japes is right. Make it something you can't spell.
Yeah. Yeah. I also want to put in this list, hurry up.
Oh, God, hurry up.
Hurry up is one of my pet peeves because I like to look at haunts. Well, I like to, you know, see what you've done. If you're telling me to hurry up, it's like, okay, you don't want me to actually stay and enjoy this.
Yeah, well, it's not just that, but I always wonder because when we're talking about haunts, we're always focused on our pace.
Right.
And how much experience there is. And sometimes I feel like we're going too fast, sometimes I feel like we're going too slow.
Right.
And I'm always, like, trying to figure it out, but then there have been many times I feel like I'm barreling through a haunt already.
Yeah.
And then the actor's like, hurry up! Get out! Hurry up! Yeah. Get out!
Yeah.
And it's like, well, all right, I guess we're not going so fast enough.
Yeah.
You know? I was going to slow down.
Right.
But yeah, and oh God, and by the way, be very, 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 very careful with come play with me or play with me.
Yeah.
That is a dangerous one.
Yes.
And because put that in the hands of the wrong actor.
Or the wrong customer.
Or the wrong customer. That can go south in a hurry.
Yeah.
Oh, man. There have been some awkward moments and haunts with that one.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing to remember about this is it's okay to have one character say something.
Yeah.
Like, one of these. But, you know, going back to what we mentioned before, repetition between everybody saying the same thing is not good. And this happens organically.
Yes.
Because actors will hear other actors and say, oh, I like that line. I should use it too.
Yeah.
Every impromptu haunt that I've been at,
mm-hmm.
That I've had a role in, has done this.
Yes.
And in fact, you know, we've got one actor who's really good at picking up what other actors say and starts repeating it, and I have to remind them, no, that's, you know, I actually went to my actor this year and said, no, that's my word.
Yeah.
Lies are in the books. They're not in your scene.
Yeah. I have the library.
Exactly.
Jesus, that man's in Christ. It makes sense in my room. It does not make any sense in yours.
Exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, that's something.
And they don't even, and your actors don't even realize they're doing it sometimes.
No, it's almost subconscious. It really is. And the problem is, like you said, it can make it so that all you hear is get out going through a haunt. There was a couple haunts. I wanted to get one of those thumb counters.
Yeah.
Every time I heard the word get out or hurry up or something like that, I wanted to tick it up and see how many times it happened over the course of a haunt. I'm pretty sure it was over 24 in one case.
Yeah.
It gets a little bit crazy. And like I said, it happens because that's a crutch.
Yeah.
It's a crutch phrase. There's almost always something better you can say.
Yeah.
In fact, get out and hurry up, I think, are among the worst things actors can say.
Right.
Even if they're not following Japes' rules.
Yeah. And help me. I don't like every single female actor.
Or every victim actor.
Or every victim.
Yeah, saying help me. Oh, come on. We've got to have something better than that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up with something not in the haunt.
Right.
And that's haunt marketing. This is one of the areas I think we have been the laziest, to be completely frank. All haunts are marketed the same. If I got myself, and I've actually done this before,
mm-hmm.
during my travels, I've collected as many haunt flyers as I can.
Yeah.
And I've spread them before me on a table, and I couldn't tell you Peter from Paul.
Yeah. Blood drips everywhere!
Blood drip haunts everywhere. Spooky people, same colors.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. One of the things I like that we do is we have a very, very different flyer style. We do not have a blood drip font. Our flyer is actually deliberately black and white and old-timey, using old-timey fonts and imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put our flyer in amongst the other haunts in the area, it stands out.
Yes, because the other haunts are going to be black background, lots of red and orange.
Which is illegible as hell.
Yeah, red and orange in the imagery. And the fonts change some, but not significantly.
Well, I mean, and a good example of this locally is there's two haunts very, very close to each other geographically, Chamber of Horrors and House of Shock.
Right.
They are extremely different haunts.
Yes.
You almost couldn't even fathom more polar opposite haunts in many ways.
Right.
Chamber of Horrors is a small family-friendly attraction, sort of a traditional spook house, if you will.
Yeah.
House of Shock is, or was, House of Shock.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird thinking of it in past tense now.
It is. It's because it's always been there since we moved here.
Exactly, the House of Shock. And it's a very adult-oriented, hardcore haunted attraction. Very different. Put the flyers side by side, it's very hard to tell which is which.
Yeah.
And that is very, very frustrating because they all use the same tropes of spooky imagery, blood fonts, and they use a lot of the same buzzwords and keywords.
Right.
But they're extremely different attractions. They're going to appeal to very different customers.
Right.
If you go to Chamber of Horrors expecting House of Shock, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
If you go to House of Shock expecting something like Chamber of Horrors, you're probably going to be very offended and...
Yeah. And your kids will be traumatized.
and therapy bills will be high.
Yeah.
This is so frustrating to me because we have such a diversity in our haunts. We all work to develop our own haunt style, our own haunt themes, and what we're doing, and it never comes across in the marketing.
Right.
And I don't understand why.
No.
And I think a lot of it comes down, frankly, to laziness or rushedness or just this isn't something that's focused on.
I think that it's partially tradition that, you know, haunt started long time ago with one style because basically there was one marketing group that would provide marketing materials.
Yeah.
And if everybody's using the same marketer to help them design their stuff, it's all going to look the same.
Yeah. And there's only a handful of companies that really do this type of work.
Right.
And
they seem to build off of each other's stuff.
Yeah. And even when they're not using those companies and doing it in-house,
right,
haunts tend to mirror what they see other haunts doing.
Right.
When you're not that other haunt.
Yes. And your flyer is not going to scare anybody.
No.
Your flyer is not meant to be a scare.
Yeah, it's a situation where it's like, I want to know what makes you unique. Why should I go to your haunt and not that haunt next door or across town or whatever?
Yes, and I want to be able to read your information very clearly and plainly.
Yeah, that's a whole separate topic, but yes, make sure your information is visible and legible.
It's all there.
And it's all there, too, yeah. And present, yes. I guess the word present is useful, too.
Yes.
It's just, for an industry that is known for its creativity, its inventiveness,
right,
and its ability to constantly evolve and to change and to grow, there are certain things it seems like we keep leaning on.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again. And this is just, like I said, these are just some of the things.
Right.
Some of the ones that really frustrate me. The marketing really frustrates me personally because I look at haunt sites and brochures and they all look the same to me. And it's super frustrating. But, yeah, I mean, we're such a creative industry. It's such a shame that we keep sometimes going back to the well and saying, like I said, we're guilty too. I understand. Believe me, when you've got, you know, so many rooms to do and only so many ideas, it is very, very difficult to come up with something new and innovative and original for every room. I understand that. But maybe we can stop falling back on the same five or six things.
Right.
And start falling back on a variety of things.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's one of the things that's so crazy is I don't see many haunts doing, like, breakaway walls.
Yeah.
Those are super easy to build.
Yeah.
Super effective.
Yeah.
But everyone built... In fact, they're easier to build than drop panels.
They are. They really are.
Significantly easier to build than drop panels, and almost nobody does them.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
No.
I haven't figured out why. It's a great scare. It's super easy to do. And but that's another potential fallback you could use. Hey, we don't know what we're doing in this room. Well, we can do a breakaway.
Yep. Do them small, do them big.
Whatever. Anyways. All in all, these are just, like I said, just an abbreviated list. There's a lot more out there. So what are some of your pet peeves? What are some of your haunt crutches you see left and right? Let us know on Facebook at Haunt Weekly, at Twitter at Haunt Weekly, hauntweekly.com, and of course at YouTube at tinyurl.com/hauntweekly. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this. If there are more haunt crutches out there, maybe we'll do another episode and chat those up.
Yeah.
Seems like if this is a topic that interests, we will run with it again. But on that note, until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode number 102, Haunt Crutches. Thank you very much for spending this hour with us, and we will see you guys next time.